I miss this weather.
I know, right?
One, two, one, two.
Michel Ann, vous travaillez et non, nous regardons la télévision. Pourquoi? Les dépenses sont mises dans une heure, s'il te plaît, vraiment, que 5 minutes. Pas question, il y a beaucoup à faire. Alors, on peut perdre le jeu. Moi, j'ai goût.
Do the pod in French.
Merci.
Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We have relocated to Oakland, where it's lovely right now. Not that it wasn't lovely in Toronto, but yesterday morning when I was out there doing my hits, Jackie, it was 49 degrees at my first hit.
That's cold.
In June.
That's 49 degrees Fahrenheit.
That's Jackie McMullen. We are on Lake Merritt. This is where our ESPN setup is here. And Tim Bontemps is also with us. Tim lived in San Francisco the last 2 years before he moved to Boston. You say you miss this weather, but I'm going to throw a flag on that. Shenanigans, as Jackie would say, because the weather in Oakland is very different from the weather in San Francisco. The weather like this in San Francisco, that's not accurate. It is not like this in San Francisco.
At my apartment in San Francisco, Brian, every day I'd walk out the door, and it was sunny. It was 65 degrees every day. 365 days a year.
I think it's in the 70s right now.
I'm in front of Oracle right now. I wish I was here too.
Yeah. Nick Friedel, Nick drew Friedel. The morning stuff. Although, that's Andrew Hahn.
No, it isn't. It's Nick Friedel.
Andrew Hahn is eating plain corn tortillas for breakfast.
I know, and it's like 9:30 It's a bold strategy. In the morning.
All right, so it's 1-1. We're going to go to practice here in a little bit. It's before the practice. I don't anticipate, by the time this podcast is out, there may be some more information on Klay Thompson, although I don't anticipate they're really going to say more than what they did in the release yesterday, which is the MRI didn't show that it was a torn hamstring, which is key. The word strain was in there, not sprain. So that's really good. He's questionable, and I really doubt that there's going to be much of an update on Durant.
The update is if he practices at all, right? I mean, that seems like more of an update than what Klay will do. I'm sure Klay won't practice.
I suppose, but in all honesty, I think that's just a mechanism to throw us off.
We're burying the lead, though.
Yeah, go ahead.
Looney's out.
You think that's a really big deal?
I think it's a really big deal.
I agree.
His numbers with him on the floor versus off the floor were remarkable. And when people were talking about Cousins and how you acclimate him back into the lineup and the roster, I think we all thought and agreed that they would use him, you know, limited minutes, because they're much better and more effective with Looney out there. And Looney, unlike Boogie, really can play with Klay and Steph. He knows where to go off that pick and roll. Look to me, even with game two, and Boogie had a good game, but there were just moments when he was out there with those guys that you're like, get out of the way. And, you know, the way Steve Kerr used Boogie in game one was he waited for those guys to go to the bench, brought out Klay, spread the floor, and then Boogie can be very effective. But how effective can he be? You don't want him mucking up what Steph and Draymond do. I think it's a big deal that Kevon Looney is out of this series. Very big deal. And that we know for certain.
Yeah, and that affects the way they can play their preferred lineups.
Yep.
But they're kind of away from playing their preferred lineups anyway because they're playing with Boogie.
Well, right? I mean, part of the problem for Golden State is it's weird to say they just don't have that many good players, right? But when you go down the list of guys, they're already playing.
I'm not sure that's 100%.
Well, no, but I mean, look, you have the guys at the top of the roster, right, who everybody knows about, but they're playing Alphonso McKinney significant minutes. They're playing Jonas Jerebko significant minutes, right? So you already were kind of at a deficit.
Yeah, but those guys have played well. I mean,
Alphonso McKinney missed a three by like 8 feet in game two and then got disappeared.
Okay, so, but he's had games where he's played really well.
Yes, but my point is they have a certain number of rotation players that Steve Kerr really trusts and relies on, to Jackie's point. And like, Boogie had the best game he had as a Warrior in game two. I do not expect him to be able to do that up to five more times in the series. He might do it one or two more times, but he's probably going to be somewhere between where he was in game one, where he's not effective, and game two, where he's really effective. And if you're basically relying on, you know, Andrew Bogut, who's barely played in, 2 years?
Although he was very good, too.
He had a decent game, too. But again, I just think it's going to be hard to get those, like them playing at that level over and over again is going to be hard to replicate. And coming into the series, one of the things I think we were sure about was that Kevon Looney's going to play 25 to 30 minutes. The fact that those 25 to 30 minutes of quality play are gone, that's just another thing that Golden State has to deal with when they already have a million other injuries.
There's a lot going on in these finals, Jackie.
There is.
Uncertainty and injuries and lineup changes and coaching strategy.
Hmm. I agree.
The Kerr is running gimmick defenses. Nick Nurse is running gimmick defenses.
Nick Nurse is running what I used to run for my fifth grade, you know, rec teams, right. Boxing one.
I remember my first year covering the NBA back in 2003. The Cavs, who were terrible on defense back then, Paul Silas midway through the season threw out a triangle and two for like three games. Ugh. And it messed some teams up, but once the scouting caught up, the teams figured out how to do it.
They destroyed it.
So Steph Curry was scoreless in the fourth quarter against the Bucks and one.
He was.
But one must assume that in these 2 days, they're going. The fifth, what you ran in fifth grade by sixth grade, they had it figured out.
They did, absolutely. So you don't run it anymore.
So, but Jackie, just in the finals you've covered, like, this is a, there's a lot going on here.
Well,
this is up there.
And the injuries can totally tilt the series. I mean, we're talking about, It's not even one, you know, we just talked about Looney, but it's the cumulative effect of him, of Clay. Even if he plays, you know he's not going to be 100%. Boogie's going to be sore or ineffective or who knows what because he's just coming off. Who have I forgotten? Iggy's beat up. I mean, I saw him, you guys saw him after game two. He had eight different ice packs all over his body. He reminded me like Patrick Ewing near the end. That's what he looked like. So you're talking about guys, and you know, you're going to ask Sean Livingston to play a ton of minutes now? That's a bad idea.
No, you just can't.
You can't.
You can't play more than the 15, 16.
Right. So that, to me, this really could tilt.
So you're
the
saying
series.
That the Warriors are being held together by tape and
I think it's,
popsicle
I think
sticks?
It's a problem. It's not that they can't win because I think they can. But, you know, Steph Curry, if there was ever a time, this is it.
So Iguodala said something interesting after game two. He's like, if I was smart, I wouldn't be playing. I know that he plays games, but I honestly think they're worried about him ripping his Achilles.
Look, this is what I've been saying the whole time, right? If Kevin Durant comes back from this calf injury, he could easily re-aggravate it and be out for the series. Klay Thompson could re-aggravate this hamstring.
But we're getting to the point in the series where it's kind of Fisher Cup Bay with Durant. Because I don't know if, you know, you're going to bring him back. Like if it's 3-2 in game six, you're going
to
bring him back.
Well,
I think
with Golden State winning in game two, that gives them a little bit of latitude to make to have him come back on Friday in game four.
That, yeah, and I think if it's not Friday, what are we doing here?
But you know my position on this. I don't care what the score of the series is. That should not dictate whether Kevin Durant is playing
or not.
Well,
I agree, but I mean...
I guess
Brian's point is like, are you going to bring him back? If it's game six and you're down 3-2, are you going to throw him out there in that game after he hasn't played
in
a month and a half?
If he's ready, yes.
Well, if you're down 3-2, you're down
3-2. I don't care what the score of the game is. If he's ready to play, you're going to play him.
Right.
If he's not ready to play, you're not going to play.
I just meant more for putting him in a situation where a guy hasn't played in 6 weeks. And then
yeah, but he's Kevin Durant.
Here's
Kevin Durant. I'll take him.
Understand, Jackie. I 100% agree that you're not going to sit there and mess around. You're going to put him back in. My thing is there's going to be a tax that they're going to have to pay when he comes back.
Of course.
They're going to have to, and that could cost you a game.
It could.
And we're getting to the point where you can't afford a game.
I agree. I don't disagree
with anything
you're saying.
It's getting late early is what I'm saying.
I don't disagree with anything you're saying, but I do think he's Kevin Durant, and his game isn't about subtleties. I don't know how else to say it. And he has been doing some shooting. Is it game action? No. Of course, it takes time for guys to come back. But this is not unprecedented.
No, you're right.
So I don't see it as big an issue maybe as you guys do.
So it's just concerning.
Sure, but it's like kind of like the Lakers when Magic ripped his hamstring and Byron Scott, I think, was the other guy. It was so long ago. I was there, but I can barely remember. Really, seriously, I'm getting old. And, you know, the series is over. I don't feel quite that way with these guys.
Yeah, well, Clay has shown in the past he has a toleration or he has an ability to play through injuries other guys wouldn't.
Right.
But you know the Raptors are going to test the hell out of him.
Of course, yeah.
Like we said after game two, like last year he played through this high ankle sprain, and he's the tough of guys I've seen in the league. I've been around him a lot, and he'll play through anything. But you can't tough through a muscle injury.
Well, my thing, not the same. The other thing is, I will say that watching Kawhi walk out of the game the other night, he is hurting too.
Of course, he is.
I don't exactly know what the injury is, but
I think it's his knee.
I don't know what it. I think it might be both legs because there's times where I thought he's reacted to his quad as much as he's reacted to his leg.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, everybody keeps asking me how hurt he is, and then he has 27-17 or 34-13
yeah,
or 35-7-9. Like, I don't know. Like,
I know that Kyle Lowry, he's talked about how he's basically getting shot up every game to deal with his dislocated thumb. And when his teammates pick him up, he won't let them pick him up by his left hand. They'll pick him up with his right hand. The other day, he took a charge in game two. I can't remember what he took the charge on. But he picked the guy up after taking the charge. And he picked up the warrior who ran over him. And he picked him up with his left hand.
Ooh.
Because after you've taken a charge and you're humbling an opponent, your left hand's usable. But, I mean, it's just like he'll have surgery. It
yeah,
sounds like he's going to have surgery.
Yeah.
And, you know, who knows what's going on with Kawhi.
Look, it's a war of attrition. I mean, this is 2 months of the finals. You know, as we've quoted Kevin a few times, our pal Kevin Arnovitz, you know, this is basketball triage at this point. It's that way on the court, in games, trying to adjust back and forth. You mentioned what Steve and Nick are doing. I think they're both doing great jobs kind of adjusting on the fly. And the medical staffs on both teams are at full throttle all the time trying to keep these guys healthy because, you know, Golden State's obviously just had injuries and Toronto's been through two wars and now they're in the middle of a third one.
So one thing that Tim pointed out to me after game two, Jackie, and I did some research into it, you know, the Warriors obviously like to play their death lineup, which is eroding because of health.
Yes, it is.
At one point in the last series, I think it was Draymond who said that they adopted Looney into the mini death lineup to replace Durant.
Right.
And that's now blown. So they've had to go back to more traditional with two traditional centers. And those traditional centers can give the Raptors trouble because the Raptors have small guards, Van Vliet and Lowry, and Norm Powell is to a certain extent.
Undersized,
and,
yeah.
And Siakam doesn't finish against size very well, even though he's got great size. And so, you know, Tim mentioned, you know, because he was covering the Raptors the whole playoffs, that, you know, against Philly – and against Milwaukee, you know, they had trouble with the size.
Especially Siakam did. Siakam in particular.
So go look at game one when the Warriors played their traditional more small with Draymond at center and Looney at center. Cousins played 8 minutes. The Raptors go 20 of 28 in the paint.
Right.
Siakam was great in there. He had, you know, made a bunch of good big-time shots mm-hmm. in there. Van Vliet made a bunch of big-time shots in there. Game two, it's 28 minutes of Cousins, and what did Bogut play, 10 minutes, give or take? I don't have it in front of me.
A little more than that, I think, but around there.
Okay, so about 40 minutes right. with the traditional center. The Raptors, I don't remember the exact numbers, but instead of shooting 75%, they shot 47%, and Siakam wasn't effective, and Van Vliet wasn't effective, and Lowry wasn't able to do much.
And neither was Gasol, by the way. The numbers with Cousins on Gasol are not pretty for Gasol.
Yeah, Gasol had at this point, I'm just sort of expecting Gasol to be feast or famine, because it's just the way he's been
when
the whole
playoffs. When he's good, they win, and when he's not, they lose. He's kind of the bellwether of their entire team.
Yeah, so when he's 10 points or more, they're 5-1 in the playoffs.
Is that right? It's a good number. So even though the Warriors are out of their preferred comfort zone, they may have their countermeasure. It's not like they had much of a choice. They have to go with what's on their roster. Their counter might actually give them some advantages against the Raptors that otherwise they may not have.
It's funny. I was saying this to somebody yesterday. I understand that Bogut's kind of like, is he your fourth center, technically, I guess?
Well, let's see. I mean,
depends
Cousins,
who you say.
Draymond,
if you
Looney,
count Draymond, he's your fourth center.
Well, yeah, so he's your fourth center. That's a pretty
Damian
darn good.
Jones rank in there?
That's like a pretty good
behind
fourth center. You know, a guy that's been there before that's really just too old, which is the only
They've
reason.
They've also started Jordan Bell at center.
I understand.
So they have got like six
centers. Right. So my point is, though, if you're going to have to go that deep, a guy that's been around, that's been there before, that's won championships with you, that's intimately has intimate knowledge of the way you want to play and has great chemistry with Curry, which I think we saw, you know, in game two, there could be worse things is my point.
Yeah, I don't know if this has been reported, and if it has, I'm not trying to steal somebody. I'm also trying not to get aggregated here. But the Warriors pretty much had the deal with Bogut done in December. They talked to him in December and said, "Hey, when your season wraps up, if we've got a spot, we're gonna do it." So they kind of had like a wink, wink, handshake agreement. You know, Bogut wanted to play in Australia and he had a great year in Australia, named MVP. I don't know if his team won the title.
I think so.
You know, they did.
Pretty
win the
sure
title?
They did. Yeah.
So you know, he had a great season. His family was there and everything. And then it was like, you know, the Warriors had a roster spot, but the buyout market wasn't kind to them. They just, you know, they were really trying to get Robin Lopez.
Mm.
And they had their eye on Robin Lopez for just as long. I think it was, my guess is that they were like, okay, if Lopez gets bought out from Chicago, we'll take Lopez, we'll tell Andrew, I'm sorry, we couldn't do mm-hmm. it. But if he doesn't get bought out, maybe we always have Bogut. But Lopez didn't get bought out.
I know, which is still so interesting to me.
I think the Bulls knew it. I don't think the Bulls knew it. I know the Bulls knew it. And they were like, it wasn't there an injury. The Bulls had an injury to Carter. Yep, they needed a center. And they were like, no, we're not buying him out. We're not buying him out to help the Warriors. We want him. We're paying him.
We're not sure we want him.
Well, right. Well,
they're not playing him. They weren't playing him.
Well, that was the problem. They weren't playing him. But they ended up playing him. He ended up getting him.
Yeah, they played him after Carter got hurt. Now, to go back to the center thing, I think there's two things from that game, from game two, that need to be monitored going forward. The first thing is that I think the more time Bogut's on the court, the worse he's going to do. He was only out there for 7 minutes. Toronto was able to move him around a lot. And while you're right, it is good to have him as a fourth center as an experienced guy. If he's out there for 10, 15 minutes, I think they're going to be able to put him in bad positions. And I don't think he's going to be able to make the finishes he did in game two when Toronto is playing more aggressively on defense. The other thing is DeMarcus, understandably, got very winded as that game went on. He normally gets winded anyway, but he hadn't played that many minutes. He hadn't played that hard in months. And Toronto got 15 offensive rebounds in that game. And
second chance points were
23-0. And Toronto,
imagine winning a game real quick? I don't want to.
No, you're good.
I know.
Can you imagine winning
of
a game on the road when you get outscored in second chance points 23-0?
Tim, do you know how many of those were in the third and fourth quarter?
I don't, but I would imagine probably a good chunk of them were.
So that's the only reason I think that stat's a little skewed.
You're right. No, you're right. It definitely was in the second half, but. And a lot of those offensive rebounds came in the fourth quarter when DeMarcus was on the court and he was very winded.
I agree.
If he has to play heavy minutes, that's something to really monitor because Toronto is going to get a lot more chances than they normally would because they're not a good rebounding team in particular normally. But if Boogie's out there huffing and puffing, understandably, again, he hasn't played in months, but that Toronto got several opportunities late in games to get two or three chances at the basket. That's something to watch late in these games if he is out there tired.
The other thing is, I don't want to say you need more from Kawhi. Kawhi had 34 points in game two. He didn't play a great game, but he got to the foul line.
I think you do need more from Kawhi, and I think that's fair to say.
So I don't think that the Warriors can effectively double team him the way they want to.
Now that they're depleted, you mean?
Because if they've got two, if they're playing Bogut and Cousins, they'll just put that big man in the screens.
Right.
And Bogut and Cousins can't come out and double him. So, yeah. They have to drop, so it gives him more maneuverability. It basically takes
That's
away.
A very good point.
It takes away their ability to trap him, which is why. Andrew, will you stop it? Good God, we are
now. We really are back in fifth grade.
We are by boats. That's all I'm gonna say. Or was that a
putting
dolphin?
Up umbrellas.
I think it's a skull.
Is that a dolphin?
There's a 40% chance that I edit that noise out, but I just keep this conversation.
And that would be good producer work.
That's a really, really good point. Because I will say this, 34 points, sure. Again, how many of them, I forgot to look, how many in the fourth quarter, 13?
I think so.
13 in the fourth quarter. So, again, I'm not throwing it out, I'm not dismissing it. I think the first half, they did about as good a job on Kawhi Leonard as anybody I've seen all year. They had him so flummoxed, they had him tucked away in corners, on end lines, on baselines. The angles he had to the basket were atrocious. He turned the ball over 5 times. So even though the numbers ended up the way they did, if I'm the Golden State Warriors, I walked away saying, we can really affect how he plays. Now, to your point, if you can't do that, then it's a whole new ball game.
Yeah, that's why I think some of the biggest work that's being done between 2 and 3 here by the coaching staffs. Is that Stephen A. screaming?
Most likely.
Sounds like it.
Most likely.
Oh, well, but First Take is over.
He's got a radio show.
So, just for the listeners and the off chance this stays, we are sitting in a patio at Lake Chalet on Lake Merritt. To one side of us, we have a long row of, I don't
boats.
Know.
Rowing skulls.
Long boats.
Rowing skulls.
Rowing skulls.
Oh, how very New England of you.
To our left, there is an evening dinner party that's being set up for Warriors season ticket holders.
And Andrew and I have been angling all morning for our invitation. Yeah.
And behind us, in the main chalet, apparently Stephen A. can be heard through the windows screaming something.
Well, he's on his radio show.
You know what he's screaming. I thought this series is going to be over now. Everybody's hurt. It's going to go seven games. I want to go home. Stephen A. is multifaceted.
He is not within sight, yet we could hear him. That's the kind of talent we're talking about here. And I challenge you to keep this in the podcast, producer.
I second that challenge.
Please leave a message after the tone.
Summer is almost here, and that means it's going to event season. Concerts, baseball games, playoff games, theater, everything that makes your summer memorable comes in the form of these great events. And when you want to go to an event and you want to get a good deal on the tickets, the answer is Vivid Seats. Vivid Seats is an online ticket marketplace dedicated to providing fans of live entertainment with those experiences that last a lifetime. With Vivid Seats, our listeners can watch their favorite teams and artists perform in person. Vivid Seats help fans find seats in those favorite live events, obviously sporting events, concerts, theater, and much more. And they do it with great prices and, most importantly, an easy purchasing experience. With the podcast code HOOPS, that's H-O-O-P-S, listeners can receive 10% off their first order with Vivid Seats. And of course, as you know already, all Vivid Seats are confirmed and they're backed by 100% guarantee. So what do? You go to the App Store or Google Play and download the Vivid Seats app. The first time customers can enter their promo code HOOPS, H-O-O-P-S, and receive 10% off that first order. Again, Vivid Seats to make this summer memorable. I think right now the work that is really going on is in the film rooms and the coaching staff. Like, all right, let's think about this. If you're the Warriors, you're sitting there and you're getting like the training reports and you're like, or the training, from the trainer staff, like, all right, like we really probably don't know what Clay can do. They probably don't really know what Durant's going to do. So they've got to create a series of different game plans. They got to create a series of game plans if they're going to play big or they're going to play small. Will they risk it with going, you know, if they have difficulty with managing Kawhi, will they just risk it and play small no matter what, even if it means they put a guy on the court they don't prefer like Jordan Bell? And if you're the Raptors, you've got to be doing what? You got to be thinking, you know, how do we take advantage with Clay? I mean, of Clay and Iguodala? How do we take advantage of their big?
You got to help Kawhi.
Yeah, I mean,
you gotta help Kawhi. A lot of times, didn't you feel with those doubles and triple teams? I'm like, why isn't somebody coming over? Just set a back screen. Give the guy a break. Help him out.
Toronto, when Toronto's been at its best in these playoffs, it's when the others have confidence and are making shots, right? You saw that in game one. Marc Gasol was making shots. Danny Green was making shots. Pascal was making shots. Fred VanVleet was making shots, right? When those guys start to miss shots and then it's Kawhi against the other team, then it becomes really difficult. Now, to your point, the way this series is starting to play out, it's actually starting to work in Toronto's favor, not only because of the injuries, which obviously are working in Toronto's favor, but also because Golden State can only get to a certain number of points now, right? This is almost like a pitching duel in baseball, where when you don't have Klay Thompson at 100%, you maybe don't have Kevin Durant, you have a limited DeMarcus Cousins. Like, I've gone into every game thinking Klay and Steph need to get to 60 to 70 points, right? I think yesterday they got to around 60. First game they got to 55. Like, now with only Steph there, you got to try to find a way to get to 95, 100 points. Well, if you say Steph gets 35, how do you get the other 65?
And he doesn't get 35 a lot in the postseason. Well, if you go back and look,
he has the first two games.
No, he has. But like, if you go back and look historically, that's not what they do because they got Durant.
But he's got to do that now.
Well, Steph, he had 23 in game two. It was the fewest points he had in 8 playoff games. Now, he was ill. He missed his first 6 shots.
He did.
I don't know if he didn't score in the first quarter. Maybe he had a couple of free throws. But then he had a great second and third quarters.
Right.
And then the fourth, the
box. He made 6 of his final 8 shots. That's what he does.
And then Clay got hurt, and they put the clamps on him, and they dared everybody else on the team to shoot.
That's the other thing. You know, if you're, you know, I don't know how, let's say they put Clay right on Kawhi to start the game. You're going to test him, but how much do you want to really run Kawhi around, too?
Well, Kawhi, they're going to do – I mean,
guys
look,
if you go back
to the start of game two, they ran 6 straight pick and rolls involving DeMarcus. To your point before about moving those guys around and attacking.
He got 2 fouls.
He got 2 fouls, and you look later in the game, what happened? He also played 28 minutes, but it's kind of like a boxing match, right, where you're hitting a guy in the body early to soften him up. And, like, as the game, like, they're going to attack DeMarcus all the time now, not only because he's not great on defense, but because as the game plays out, you want to have him as worn out as possible at the end of the game when he has to play, and then you can take advantage of him.
So, Brian, what are you expecting in Game 3?
Well.
Good producing.
Man, Stephen A. is on one.
I have high confidence that no one's going to be able to hear that. So.
Okay, good.
But you're going to challenge me to leave your reaction
no,
to
Stephen
A. No, I don't
care. You can do whatever you want. So, what am I expecting in Game 3? Well, I'm expecting the Warriors at home.
No one's going to be able to hear that?
I mean, it's amazing.
It's truly
a
talent.
Nothing happened yesterday.
He's strangling a goose.
Nothing happened yesterday.
Animal rights people, I'm kidding. Totally kidding.
Anyway, well, the game is at Oracle, I do believe.
I do believe.
I just double-checked.
Yep.
The Warriors have a tendency to really play well and have onslaughts at Oracle. So I'm expecting the Warriors to have those onslaughts and maybe early. I have been impressed with how the Raptors have handled when the Warriors have gone on hot streaks. Obviously, the 18-0 run to start the third quarter was a 20-0.
Back to the second quarter.
Whatever that was.
18-0.
That was not so good. But that said, they got it down to a one-possession game in the last minute.
They're good at that.
So really, handling poise is going to be – or you're keeping their poise is going to be important. And that's where Kawhi comes in. You know, Kawhi has had success in that building doing that.
Well, and remember,
so they're going to really rely on him.
Go back to December. The Raptors won by a billion points here with Kawhi out and with all of Golden State stars playing. So, I mean, I'm not saying it's comparable to compare a regular season game to a finals game, but it's not like these guys are going to walk into Oracle and be overawed by it. I mean, they came in here and played their tails off back in December and had one of the best wins of the year.
But you know what? They need
got them home court, by the way.
Yep. They need more from Lowry. Lowry's pressing both games so far. I don't even know what the numbers are. I just know what I see.
He's 6 of 20 shooting. I know it's not all about scoring for him.
Well, but it's also like we usually talk about him as a gritty player, an intelligent player. The fouls that he took in game two, he's lucky it didn't hurt them more than it did. I mean, the fourth and fifth fouls both, I'm like,
sixth foul was terrible.
Well, I thought when he reached in
92 feet from the basket. Look, in game one, he didn't shoot the ball well, but he had 7 rebounds, he had 7 assists, he took several charges, he was everywhere, right? He did all the Kyle Lowry stuff, even though he didn't shoot the ball. Game two, to your point, he took bad fouls, he also didn't make shots because he took that sixth foul. Remember, he fouls out with 3:52 to go in the fourth quarter, right? The Raptors didn't score for 4 minutes there. Neither team scored. The Raptors might have won that game if he didn't foul out because their offenses would have run better with him on the court, even though he wasn't making shots, right? So he cannot, like Brian said this after the game, it's inexcusable for Kyle Lowry, the leader of that team, to commit that foul, to slap DeMarcus Cousins on the arm 92 feet from the basket. He just can't do that.
Well, remember, he fouled out in one of the games against Milwaukee, too.
He did, but that one was more like – that was just kind of like he picked up a sixth foul. It wasn't bad. I think he tried to take a charge.
But why? My point is, like, just be a little more judicious so you don't get to that point where you have six fouls. You're too important to your team.
I know, but the way Kyle plays, he's gonna try to draw charges and sometimes pick up – like, he's going to rack up fouls.
I understand that, but all six and more in charges. I just think if this role that he's been in all year has been perfect. He hasn't had to be the primary guy. Kawhi's done that. He's done so well. But he's pressing. I thought he really pressed in game two. And he's not at his best when he does that. They need more from him.
I bet he plays well in game three.
I wouldn't bet against that, but I think they need it.
I think he's going to make shots. I think he's going to bounce back and play well. Kyle's due for a game. Remember, in game one in Milwaukee, he had 30 points, right? And he was also big in game five. He had two huge shots in the fourth quarter of game six to help stabilize that run, right? Like he's stepped up in these playoffs and had big moments. And he's due to have a good game. I bet he has a good game in game three.
So what if Durant does come back and play in game three?
It really helps the Warriors a lot.
it just gets back to the math problem.
He's
got to
be
really
sitting
help.
There
dying.
We all know that Kevin is in his own head. And only he knows how that calf feels. I mean, you know, I'm sure he's communicated it to his trainers, to the Warriors trainers. They're looking at it every day. Obviously, if you see him work out, but I mean, you know, he had a 5-hour flight that he had to think about this. He's thinking about this all the time. He obviously knows his team is in trouble. forget about free agency. None of that matters right now. He's trying to get this.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's thinking about that. Even
you saw him after game two. You saw that video of him and Clay in the hallway, right? Like, they were both dying. They weren't out there.
I was back there when it was going on before the video was on. I saw how
emotional
those guys wanted to be out there.
Well, just think if Durant's on the floor in the final minutes of game two. Do you think you can play a box
not running
one
a box
on Kyrie
one.
Irving? No way. I mean, Steph Curry? No way.
It goes back to that math problem, right? Like, part of the reason Golden State is in this trouble with the math is because they don't have 30 points a game from Kevin Durant. You bring him back, all of a sudden, even if he's only can make, say he just can spot up from three and be a threat like that, right?
Yeah.
If he's out there instead of Jonas Jerebko spotting up as kind of a decoy, you have to pay attention. You can't leave him. You can't do some of the doubling they've done.
He's also just an ISO guy that can create his own shot, and he's 7 feet tall, and he can shoot over anybody. And that's something that nobody else on either roster has at this exact moment.
I just feel like it's very difficult for me to see what's going to happen here. There's just too many variables. I mean, what if Steph just has one of his really bad games? Like, it happens. He's holding them through.
And he's also done better at drawing the BS fouls in this series than I've ever seen him.
He's
been amazing.
He's gone way into the bag.
Have you noticed, too, how since Durant's been out, he hasn't been called for any of his dumb fouls? Have you guys noticed that? He hasn't been in foul trouble yet.
You're right.
An interesting point.
Well, you might have just jinxed him. He's. I love Steph, but like, he does a lot of the Kyle stuff.
But he hasn't been.
The dumb reach and stuff. You're right.
Like, I could honestly see like Durant saying, "All right, I just got to play, and I'll play through it," and him going for 25 points, and the Warriors taking control of the series. I could see.
You could see Clay and Durant not play. You could see Steph have a bad game.
Clay's going to play.
I think Clay's going to play. But what if he's just not himself?
Or he gets hurt again?
Yeah, and then the Raptors get the leverage.
What about this? What if Durant goes to Steve Kerr and says, "I know what you guys are thinking, but I'm ready to play. I'm going to play." And Steve Kerr says, "Sorry, dude, I'm not playing you."
Boy, I cannot see that happening. Unless his trainer says he is in danger of tearing his Achilles if you let him.
I could see them waiting until Game Four again. That win on Sunday. Your point about where the series is at is true. It shouldn't matter, but it does matter in the sense that you get that win on Sunday. They're going to feel confident if they're down 2-1, they can win three of the last four. It does buy them a couple extra days. Because remember, this is the one stretch of the series where it's a game, an off day, and a game. So if you're worried about a guy being a little, you know, iffy coming back, if you wait till after game three, then it's 2 days between every game after that. You get more rest, more chance to recover. That could factor in, too.
That's a very good point. The recovery between three and four is the tightest in the series.
But you know what? At this point, and this is what's not unusual, when you get to this point every year, there's always somebody that we don't even know about that has something that's bothering him, that's something that's affecting him, and we don't find out about till later. I mean, Paul George played with a completely destroyed shoulder, and we all knew it, but he played every game. When I look back on it, I just can't even believe it. It's like, this is totally off the beaten path, but it never ceased to amaze me. Logan Mankins played with a torn ACL for the New England Patriots for like almost a whole season. So these guys, where they can go mentally.
Tiger Woods won the U.S. Open with a broken leg.
Yep.
Yeah, he reminds us of that often.
You're so right. He does.
Logan Mankins never talks about what he did.
Yeah. He just did because, like, John Daly has arthritic knees, so they gave him a cart.
Right. I heard him talk about it again.
He's like, well, you know, I won the U.S. Open on a broken leg.
Yes, he did.
Don't ask me. Yeah, I mean, guys do things. And
superhuman things.
Yeah. And that's why I'm wondering, like, what's in Durant's head? Like, you know, like, I wish I had the answers to this. I wish I had the insight. I just don't. Like, I wonder if, like, you know, his teammates probably aren't pressuring him, but I wonder about people in his life. You know,
like Rich?
Like his agent or, you know, his close friends who, you know, like
his mom.
Some people may say, hey, you don't go out there and play. You've got a, you know, $200 million contract that's on the line here.
But he doesn't.
Kevin Durant.
But he
Kevin
doesn't,
Durant,
right?
Look, Kevin
think
Durant,
about Brian. He doesn't. Someone's going to pay Kevin Durant as much money
Kevin
as
Durant,
you want. But I'm telling you, there are people who believe that if you're injured, you should never play.
Kevin Durant.
The team will never take care of you in the ultimate.
Right. But my point is, even if Kevin Durant tore his calf, came back, tore his calf muscle, you think that's going to stop everybody from giving him a max deal? No way.
Zero chance. They're Kevin Durant loves nothing more than playing basketball. He's going to play in the series if he possibly can physically. Nobody's going to talk
saying,
him out of it.
I wonder. I can only imagine all of the competing voices.
Right, that's
both
fair.
Within his head and in his life.
The ones within his head are enough. I mean, just him talking to me about that free throw, like when he's at the free throw line and he's like thinking, "What if I miss? Oh no! What if I make it? Well, I'm supposed to make it. But will people love me?
In your pressure story.
Right, like I just...
And you were talking about, and he was in junior high school?
No, high school. Sophomore in high school. But it just, to me, it's just the fact that he ever thought that way. Like, I don't know very many NBA players that ever, like, actually said, will people love me if I make this free throw? That, it made me a little sad.
Yeah, so just
like that your validation is based on...
Right. So think about what he's going through.
I know. I feel for him. I really feel for him. I think he's a great competitor, and I mean, I just I don't think anyone should be questioning whether he's tough enough. I just don't think that's fair.
Yeah.
Do you want to take a field trip to see what Stephen A. is yelling about?
No,
right
not
now?
Really.
No?
No, he's calmed down.
He's
a
clear, I mean,
let's take a field trip out on one of these skulls.
Please leave a message after the tone.
So I'm going to read a spot here by one of my favorite advertisers, Goodyear, Andrew, because Goodyear, my grandfather worked there for almost 40 years. It's from my hometown. And I've noticed on our other platforms that they have a really good, like, deep reading person who does the Goodyear ad read. So I'm going to try my best to sound like that person, okay? It's that time of year again, the NBA Finals. This is where all the hard work pays off and we see who's tough enough to be crowned champion. It's where players are more driven than ever to go further, faster, and longer. That's what drives Goodyear to make tires that do the same. Goodyear knows that performance is everything, whether it's on the court or on the road. So when it comes to choosing tires, let Goodyear.com help you choose what's best. Goodyear, more driven. All right, because we are contractually obligated to talk a little bit of free agency in every podcast, two little interesting tidbits have happened in the last couple of days. One is that, I don't even know what this means, but there was a shirt that came out, a Kevin Durant-based shirt in the Nike, in his Nike line that came out on Nike's website for sale.
I didn't see this.
Well, you're going to learn. You're going to learn in real
time. I'm
excited.
I don't know what's coming.
That had a sort of a new branding that said "Stay True." Do you know what I'm talking? Did you see this, Andrew? So
I'm going to look this up right now.
Yeah, folks are you know the people, the online investigators are out hard on this one. So this, you know, Durant has his own line with Nike, and a shirt appeared on there, a T-shirt. And it had this branding that said "Stay True," and it had all the cities that he'd ever played in on the back of his on the back of the shirt. "Stay True" on the front of the shirt, all the cities he's ever played in on the back, and it listed, you know, his where he played in high school.
He played for like three teams in 4 years in high school.
That's true.
Okay.
Austin, Texas, Oklahoma City, Oakland, and then it had listed San Francisco, where obviously the Warriors would play next year. But I'm more interested in that Nike apparently has some sort of branding that's "Stay True," which, you know, like, remember, like, Kobe had a whole branding ready for him, the Mamba Out thing and all this stuff that was all set up and ready to go when he retired. So, you know, internet researchers have done this. And I can remember when LeBron was going to be a free agent in 2010, at one point there was a discussion about the tour that he would go on to various cities where he was going to take free agent pitches. And Nike had some designs, or at least some I shouldn't say that they denied that they did, but I know that this was discussed, some sketches of some specific colorways of shoes. So this would be his New York. So when he would go on his visit to New York, he would wear these New York colorways. When he'd go to Chicago, these would be the Chicago colorways. Now, Nike denied it, but again, I know that they discussed it. Now, they ultimately junked all that and didn't do it, but there was some discussion of at least
Nike discusses everything, as they should.
So I wonder, I'm sure Nike has strategies that they are developing. Should Durant sign with the Knicks? Should Durant stay?
Could always switch "Stay True" to "Stay True to Hoopin'."
Whatever.
And they could go play
I'm just
anywhere.
Saying that happened, and it's an interesting little thing that was
very
out
interesting.
There. It was out.
It's
there.
An interesting shirt. I just saw it.
Yeah. And I went and looked because I'm not up on everything. I'm not sure like whether he's had "Stay True" clothing before. This is a whole new brand, but that So that's all I'm just going to say, that that is out there and it existed and it was on the internet, on Nike's website. It wasn't like, I think it was legitimate.
There's going to be a lot of tea leaves to read between now and early July.
That's all I'm saying is that there's possibility that Nike has some sort of new Kevin Durant campaign called Stay True.
Okay.
I'm not sure that they would have that.
Can I add something?
Yeah.
Nike did this wonderful commercial with Kyrie Irving at Boston Garden playing one-on-one with his dad.
You're right. It's one of the moments of the year for me.
Right. So
made a very wonderful scene in our Celtics obit a few weeks ago.
It did, but doesn't mean that Kyrie's going to
Jackie,
stay.
I don't know what it means. I'm just telling you that it happened.
No, I appreciate that.
As I said, it's a very interesting tidbit. One of many that are coming.
And I don't know if Kawhi filed this lawsuit yesterday or it just became public.
No, he filed it yesterday.
Okay. Do you know about this, Jackie?
I do.
So one of the things that I noticed, and I remember talking to Tim about this, was throughout all of last summer, every time that Kawhi was photographed anywhere, mm-hmm. even when he was visiting Toronto, he was not wearing any Raptors gear, which is not the end of the world, but typically you do see guys wear their team gear.
He's wearing something very specific.
He was wearing his logo.
Right.
Which was a hand.
The claw.
Where it sort of formed a K and an L using the size of his hand.
Yep.
Also, apparently it was a number 2 in there. I never saw the number 2
There is a number 2 involved. Okay. But the main logo is his hand. Like, it's his hand with the K and the L.
He does have incredible hands.
And it's a cool logo. And he loves it. And I know he loves it because he literally wore it every single time I saw him in photographs.
And I know that from other people who know him very well, that's something he cares a lot about.
Okay. So when his contract with Jordan lapsed and he turned down an extension offer, he ended up signing with New Balance. Well, it turned out that Nike owned the rights to that logo, and so he could no longer wear it. And in fact, in this lawsuit, Nike told Kawhi, don't wear it anymore.
Unbelievable.
And
because he drew it himself, right, Tim?
That's what the lawsuit says.
Kawhi has always maintained that he is the one who created this logo, and it means a lot to him. He really likes it. He wore it. It was a Jordan brand. He was part mm-hmm. of the Jordan brand, like right. sub-brand. He wore his stuff all the time, everywhere. And, yeah, like, when he went to New Balance, that was one of the questions, like, how is this going to go? Because this is something he really cares about, and it's hard to see Nike, like, selling it to New Balance or selling it to him.
So beyond the actual details of the lawsuit, let me tell you what I find more interesting. The Clippers have been really, really working very hard on their Kawhi, preparing for the Kawhi pitch. And the Clippers looked at all those photos, too. Also at San Diego State, where he played, and he takes care of the team. I had not seen this, but I have been told that that logo is everywhere.
Unbelievable.
So the Clippers, according to Mark Stein for the New York Times, the Clippers actually looked into buying the logo from
Nike.
So that they could give it to him.
But that's got to be tampering, right? It's got to be.
I would say it's less tampering, and it's more that it's beyond. You can't, like, give people something beyond payment, right?
It'd be a cap circumvention.
Yeah, like, you can't.
Why?
Can't do that.
Well, because you can't buy something. It'd be like buying Lake Chalet and giving it to Kawhi.
Hey, LeBron, come join our team. Here's the max contract, and also here's 5% of the Knicks.
You can't buy them houses and cars.
That depends on many, 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 many factors.
I don't see how the league would allow you to buy, We'll set that aside.
Let's say you come to a free agent meeting and I give you an iPad. Is that against the rules? Can I give you an iPad?
It depends on what value. I would say it's a significantly different thing to buy intellectual property from a company and give it to a player than it is to give a guy an iPad.
Again, the actual.
Or a Maserati.
Or a much right. You can't even do that.
A gift from his father. Stop at full speed at 100 miles. You know who that is? Alice Cooper. $1 billion babies. Go ahead. Continue.
Milwaukee. That's a deep reference. That's a deep reference. Do you even get it? Do you get that?
I didn't hear what you said.
Milwaukee. Never mind. All right. I spent an Alice. Never mind.
Okay. Great DJ,
but beyond
the actual,
I'm not a trademark attorney. I know some of them. They're good people.
But you resemble one on TV.
I resemble one. I definitely resemble a lot of attorneys. Okay. So forget about all the legal ease and forget about this lawsuit. What is the couple things we learn? Number one, we learn how much Kawhi cares about
That's tough. Something like that. A little surprising, right?
We get a window into Kawhi. And by the way, Kawhi is...
Or the people that advise Kawhi.
No. This is a Kawhi thing.
Kawhi, he wants that logo.
I know for a fact. He really...
I'm
not saying I know... Yeah. I don't... Like, I'm not getting into the details of the lawsuit. I'm just saying this isn't like the people around him care about it. This is something he personally cares a lot about. And he wants. It isn't like some people around him saying, oh, we should go get this logo. This Kawhi wants this thing.
So it's Kawhi driven.
Yeah.
All right. That's one. Secondly, that it just goes in to show how much the Clippers are working on this. So this is just one little facet.
Has that been reported? Because you're going to get aggregated.
No, Mark Stein
reported.
Okay, good.
Yeah, Mark reported
last
week.
You're getting aggregated. That's a great little nugget.
Yeah.
Love Mark Stein.
Okay, so this
shout out to Mark Stein.
So this is one thing that became public. Imagine what.
What else?
Imagine
what else.
Imagine
there
how thick their Kawhi dossier is, and not just the Clippers. I'm sure there are other teams who are doing this kind of prep.
Same with
the Raptors.
I was just thinking the other day.
Same with Durant. Same with all these guys.
I was just thinking the other day, like Jerry West is getting the Presidential Medal of Freedom. Maybe he'll give it to Kawhi. What do you think?
Do you think he would? Is he getting the Medal of Freedom?
Yes,
he is.
Trump is giving it to
him. But you know what upsets me about this? Bob Cousy was told that he was going to get a Presidential Medal of Freedom, and it hasn't happened yet. And he's 90 years old. Mr. Trump, come on, get with it. If you're going to do it, do it quickly.
The older Celtics are...
Yeah.
We just lost one.
It's unbelievable that Bob Cousy outlived John Havlicek. It blows me away. It just blows me away.
It's crazy.
Well... Has there ever been a team that's had multiple Presidential Medal of Freedom winners on it? Because Bill Russell got the Presidential
Medal.
Yes, he did. And he got it right before the finals, and he came to a finals game.
Right. And then, if you recall, when the NFL players were going through all their strife about kneeling for the national anthem, he went on Twitter with his Presidential Medal of Freedom and kneeled and had a picture put out on Twitter.
I remember that. So I don't know what it means. I just think, you know, lawsuits are expensive, not that Kawhi doesn't have money. There's three different There's three different law firms involved in this, which, again, just tells me that this was a long-term process where, you know, this was not just a flippant, just file a lawsuit.
When you can read in the lawsuit, they've been going back and forth ever since Kawhi signed in the wintertime, for 6 months, saying, hey, we want to use this. No, you can't. Hey, we want to do this. No, you can't.
And it's just so interesting because it's difficult to find what Kawhi is passionate about. We know he's passionate about basketball. We know he's passionate about working on his game. But it's been difficult to get into his head.
We know he's passionate about Wingstop San Antonio, one of six Twitter accounts he follows.
Really?
No, never mind.
Oh.
Dumb joke. It's true. It's a dumb joke.
He only follows six accounts?
Yes.
What are the other ones?
San Antonio Spurs, HEB, Jamal Crawford. I don't remember the other
I like joke. Jamal Crawford. That's mad respect. I like that.
Yeah, I asked Jamal about it a couple of years ago. And I think Jamal's response was... He identified Kawhi had a lot of talent early, gave him props, and like they just respected each other as a result.
Well, I think, too, everyone from the Spurs really appreciates what Jamal Crawford did for DeJounte Murray and how he mentored that guy who was probably headed in the very, very wrong direction, and Jamal Crawford pretty much saved
him.
So Seattle, I think
Jamal
Crawford gets mad respect across the league.
Few guys more liked than Jamal Crawford, universally.
And we're going to wrap this up, but I just found that lawsuit very interesting. Tim wrote a story about it. You read the whole lawsuit. Was there anything else in the... I mean, I don't want to really get into legalese.
I mean, there were some amusing things in there. Like, at one point in the lawsuit, it read, Kawhi Leonard is known for having enormous hands, and they've been a huge part of his success in
the
NBA.
You have to assume that, you know, the judges
they're
and
like
lawyers.
Explain. Well, no, they're just... It was just like explaining very basic facts about Kawhi, right? Like, Kawhi Leonard was, you know, starred at San Diego State. He was drafted by the... You know, it's an NBA fan. You're kind of like, this is funny
in
a lawsuit.
Of course, that has to be honest.
Yeah.
No, yeah, it's just funny to kind of read through it. But like you said, it was an interesting... For a guy people don't know a lot about, right? It's an interesting view, like you said, into something he really cares about. And like, to your point before, it's fair to wonder, like, hey, is this something that... You know, business associates are interested in, like, no, this is something this guy really cares about and wants to have. And, you know, we'll see what happens.
He has
a very high winning percentage in court, but maybe he'll win.
I wonder, too, if it's a way, if, like, once again, we can generalize that one thing we have learned about Kawhi Leonard over the last two seasons is he is somewhat a man of principle who, when he makes up his mind about something, isn't going to change it, no matter how difficult it might be.
Good point. Thankful to the Hoop Collective podcast. We will be doing a post-game podcast after Game 3 tomorrow, so I hope you enjoy that as well. Have a good week, and we'll talk to you later.